Blog Talk Radio.
The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron. A podcast featuring Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each episode, Elvira and Deb will help you create rituals, cast spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures, and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Deb, take it away.
Whoa, okay. I always feel like I need to say something very, you know, fluid, like, yes, here we are, that kind of thing.
We are.
I'm glad that we're back on air. This obviously begins a new month, and so for those tuning in, the theme for this month is mastering our inner warrior. And obviously, mastering our inner warrior, our very first show, is, of course, Ares, the warrior of courage and war. And he's a god, obviously, but I was mentioning earlier that when I say I'm doing this show on Ares, a lot of people immediately go, wow, that's a great sign. Wonder what you're going to talk about in your life. No, it's just a god.
Right.
This is a god. And I think if I had said Mars, they would have probably gotten a better, you know, grip on it, because the Romans kind of, as we are not talking about Mars, but that Aries was moved into the aspect of Mars, and that became their version of the god of war and, you know, battle and courage and all that. So anyway, very quick update for my week has been, it's been very strange. Energetically, it's been edgy. And I know last week we, you know, did have a kind of an interesting time frame, and it kind of evened out coming into it late, like a late bloomer. But it turns out that this week just seemed a little like, oh, I don't know how I feel today, and kind of that maybe I was getting ready to do Aries and kind of feel like I'm in battle here. But, you know, generally speaking, the weather has been edgy and weird. It goes from nice warm weather, like 75 degrees, to cold at night, or now we've got major rain and thunder coming in over the next couple of days. So, you know, I really don't know how to dress in the morning. I start out with one thing and either layer up or layer down. But, and quite honestly, I had a real fun experience. I let my dogs out on the back porch, and I was sitting there and, you know, trying to get some stuff done, and I hear them, they're quiet. They're like so quiet. So I go out and I look out the door, and one dog is looking one way. The female dog is like staring down from the porch area on the ground, and I couldn't figure out what was it, because none of the dogs were out there around or anything. So I kind of got out and I quietly walked over and I kept looking, and I couldn't see what she was looking at. So I had to sit kind of like where she was at and then move to the side. And when I did that, I saw this rabbit. Now, the rabbit blended in really nicely with the dirt and the grass, you know, the dead grass and all of that. And so I kind of looked at him, and then because I was trying to get them in now, and they weren't moving. So I went, rabbit, 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 rabbit. And the rabbit took off, and the dogs kind of went, what happened? And then they came in. So but I hadn't seen rabbits, you know, in a while because of the winter and everything. But it was interesting. It was definitely, I don't know if the word spring comes in here. It was kind of like, oh, well, now we got rabbits. And, you know, of course, everybody was sending me the GIFs, the GIFs, the little pictures of squirrels jumping for, you know, leap year at the end of the last week. Because they know that my dogs really, you know, get freaky and love squirrels and run around doing all kinds of weird stuff, trying to figure out how they're going to capture them. But anyway, that's been my week. So what's been your week, Deb?
Wow. Well, talking about rabbits, that's so funny because it's there's been a lot of rabbits around here. So I'm expecting that coyotes will soon be showing up because we've had like an excess amount of rabbits. I know I went out like a couple nights ago. I was letting my dog Loki out, and when I opened up the door to go out, the backyard light went on, and there was like four bunnies running around on the grass in the back, and they're used to Loki. They just kind of looked at her, which she started chasing them, but she never catches them because they know just where to run and they can get out under the fence pretty quick, right. You know, and so they, I think they just run off and then just kind of laugh at her. this past week for me has been, it kind of felt like a recovery or a week. My schedule seems to have settled down a little bit. I've been able to do, like, consistently the three things that I feel make a good self-care foundation for me. And so that's, you know, getting, you know, a good amount of exercise, eating good, healthy food, and also meditate. And so it's been kind of nice this week that I've been able to do that each day. Each morning has been kind of nice. And so, you know, I've actually been feeling better, and I tend to feel better when I'm balanced with those and that I have, you know, the time to be able to do those in a real consistent way. So this past week has been more like about just kind of self-care. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's really, you know. actually, it's funny. You said that when we were talking, you know, when we were discussing, you know, our topic. And it just so happened that my daughter wanted to go get chiropractic adjustment, and they happened to have a really good masseuse in the office. So between the two of us, we're going to be enjoying that as well, which was funny because when you said self-care, I immediately, you know, I didn't think anything of it until she connected with me and said, Mom, you know, can you find out the availability of, and I'm like, self-care, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So, well, let's dive into Aries and see where we come up with, because he's an interesting fellow. Obviously, he is the ancient Greek god of war, battle, you know, it kind of can get into the courage, and there's the energies of that. And it's interesting, when I did my research, there were a lot of places that I kept finding they were really getting into, like, you know, slaughter and brutal warfare and, you know, battle lust and all of this. And I'm like, well, I mean, I didn't necessarily think of Aries as such, but then, you know, that is a part of the dynamic, but he's probably one of our first wild child gods that we can, you know, kind of look at and go into. And he does have a lot of mythology and things that we're going to talk about. Obviously, he is the eldest child of Zeus and Hera, not the first child, because that kind of goes to his half-sister, Athena, who is also the goddess of war and strategy. And then, of course, you can look at his different children that he's had. Several of them did go into war with him, meaning when he would go into battle, you know, he would have his sons with him. And at that point, you know, you have, I believe it's Phoebus is Panic, and Deimos are his sons, among others. But they would go into battle with his sister, Eris, which is, you know, one of the ways she's described as the goddess of strife. And so, you know, you had other kind of lesser gods that would come in that had the same energy of, you know, that fight and battle and winning. So you did have a lot of that were part of it. It's interesting that he's actually, his name is pre-Greek, and it comes from, you know, Myasthenius, area of Greece. So he's kind of like pre the normal, you know, Hellenic Greece that we know of.
Pronounced it a lot better than I would have.
Well, I've been trying. Now, I'm going to say this. I know it's going to be laughable, but I've been sitting for the last few days looking at these words and saying them out loud and going like you would when you're starting to actually read, and you go, you know. So if any of us, either one of us, mispronounce, we certainly apologize to the various aspects there. In that, so, but he definitely, it's funny because one of the things I was looking at is, I mean, they have different things like what are his, you know, symbols. Well, of course, you know, it's always the shield, the helmet, the spear, you know, there's always these, you know, aspects of war. And then they talk about animals, and I'm sitting here laughing because, of course, they have the dog, the wolf, you know, the vulture. But then they have the boar, and the mascot to the Northwest Arkansas University, which is the big university for this area here, and they've got a football team, which Arkansas does not have a pro football team, so this is their baby, and it's a red, which is one of his colors, by the way, Mars' colors, is a red hog or boar, wild boar. And I laughed when I started reading this and going, oh, great, well, there you go. Aries, you're here in the south with us. So, but it's interesting because even though there's a lot of, I don't want to say negativity because that's putting a judgment call on a god of war or a goddess of war. And I know you're, I'm going to turn it over to you in a few moments, and you've probably got a lot more to say. But I also feel that he is, you know, when I read this, I thought he is a true wild child, you know, and he has recklessness, and, you know, he's the one that, you know, takes offense and, you know, puts himself in front. But he also has a more positive side is that if things have been unjust, and I don't know if the word really applies, but if something has been wrong, like someone has been raped or killed or something unjustly, he will come to the fore. And that is part of what he, you know, his energy also comes with is that process. So with that, I'm going to just gently, not with any kind of force of that energy, move it to your side, Deb.
You know, I knew, you know, some information and some background about Aries, and I became kind of more interested in him, actually, just because of some of the hate it seemed like he got. And I think my natural tendency is to root for any underdog. And And to me, he really kind of seemed like an underdog in a lot of ways. You know, he's, you know, depicted as a warrior. You know, he's always mm-hmm. carrying a spear or sword. And he, well, and with his parentage, well, he's one of the 12 Olympian gods. And so he's the son of Zeus and Hera. And I think that's kind of interesting because he's an entirely divine being, unlike many of the other Greek gods who came after him, whose parentage often included one human parent. So I think his energy might be more, might be different, put it that
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, just like looking at his name too, I saw that some scholars report that the name Ares, meaning battle or war, was also used as an epithet. And I love a good epithet for many gods such as Zeus, Arios, Aphrodite, Area, and Athena, Area. And that was like mm-hmm. referring to their function in battle and war.
Mm-hmm.
And so so it almost seems like he was almost more of a pure, raw energy having to do with battle or war. So, and he does get a bad rap in part because he personifies war and courage, but it's kind of accentuated that he represents battle in its most, like, brutal form.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone's looking up stuff on Ares, you'll notice that he does have, like, a fair amount of. And so I kind of dug into that a little more just to see, like, how different scholars view Ares. And and it's interesting to note that, according to some of the, like, that very thin slice of his mythos down to us from Athenian sources were a lot of times unfavorable towards him. And I saw that one scholar wrote at the beginning of his observation, this is a quote, "It should be noted that history is written by the victors, but only if they are literate." And so you can see, like, that Greek mythology has one of the most complete records out of any form of Western mythology, because they wrote down almost everything. And they had, a pretty advanced literary tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So much of their traditions and folklores and story were almost perfectly preserved. And then if we kind of look at other mythologies like Norse or Celtic, you can kind of see that a lot of those were predated literacy. And so for the most part, that meant that a lot of their myths were transmitted orally and were only written down maybe after the Christian missionaries came around and wrote things about them. But then those authors were known to have a bias against pagan beliefs, so not every story was accurate, or many of them were, like, reinterpreted to be more Christian-friendly. So with that background, if you look at Ares and we look at the Greeks, we know that the Greeks had a very advanced literary tradition, especially those from Athens. And not every author was from Athens, but a great many were. And so Ares was mostly, I would say, it seemed like he was mostly worshipped, like, in Sparta. And Sparta was a military state, and they didn't really care about things like writing or books and stuff like that. And so, and they were essentially Athens' arch enemy during most of the classical Greek period. And so, just going back to Ares, it's easy to see how much differently he was characterized in Spartan culture compared to how he is portrayed in most of the Greek mythology. Because the Spartans considered Ares to be, like, the perfect soldier, and his worship was really popular there. But Unfortunately for him, his biggest fans, the Spartans, ended up making themselves the nemesis of the Athenians, did you call them?
Mm-hmm.
The people from Athens.
Athenians.
And, yeah, and so a couple of scholars I saw noted that they believed that the biggest propagandists in the Greek world back then were the Athenians.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go, you know, into looking at it that way, then it's only natural that since the Spartans aligned themselves so closely with Ares that he would be portrayed as the nemesis of their own patron war god, Athena.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we see happen in just about every Athenian story, especially since Sparta was made up of mostly illiterate full-time soldiers, we see Ares being portrayed in a highly negative light. And some believe that the Spartans viewed Ares much in a similar way to how the Romans viewed their god of war, which is Mars, which is a different guy, but he's also a god of war. And so my opinion, just kind of looking at some of the different sources, is that Ares had kind of like a healthy dose of some character assassination going on in a way. But then I'm just going to say one more theory. Another theory I've seen for the hate towards Ares has to do with Ares potentially being, I'm pretty sure he's the only son of Zeus and Hera, because Hephaestus was descended just from Hera. And so all of the younger gods who descended from Zeus had to put up with varying degrees of Hera's hatred because they all represented Zeus's infidelity. And
right.
So Ares was the only one who both of the ruling parents were on somewhat good terms with. And most of the younger gods did not have it that good. So following that train of thought, many of these other deities may have aimed their hatred for Zeus, who had sometimes raped or murdered their mothers, who had served as concubines. And so it might have been too dangerous for many of them to act out their anger towards Zeus, but Ares, as the legitimate son, might have ended up target for some of the hate. Because if we look at Ares' behavior when he's not engaged in battle, he does show some restraint and might have been thought of as a safer target in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but then even Zeus kind of black-sheeped him when Athena broke the rules and speared him. But if we remember that Zeus had killed and usurped his own father, Cronos, it crosses my mind that Zeus might have been trying to nip in the bud the idea that Ares could do the same to him.
Exactly.
So there's, you know, I really feel like he's pretty... He's more multifaceted than what the main stories will put out. Because even, like, digging behind a little bit of some of, like, what went on with the Trojan War. But I'm going to kind of save that for after the break.
After the break.
There's a lot of backstory to that, and I'll probably only touch on a little bit of it, but really kind of puts things into a different light when you start, you know, looking at all the different players.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, it's interesting you say that because, you know, I was looking at some of my notes and, you know, they talk about, you know, the good characteristics or qualities or, you know, beauty and courage and, you know, the sense of it's, you know, being a warrior. There's a certain harshness, but then there's this other side that they also show. And we know that, you know, he had his tryst with Aphrodite. And, you know, so there may have been a little bit of a softness that came out, not just, you know, a playboy type thing of, you know, I'm one of the hot bad boys and I can get whatever I want. But it's interesting because... you know, they're very quick to tell you that he, you know, represents physical or violent, untamed aspect of war. And yet, what I was actually talking with you before was that, you know, I mean, we have the berserkers, in the Nordic tradition. We have Sekhmet in the Egyptian, and she is a, you know, she got drunk. They, you know, she got her, they had to get her to the point where she got drunk and she passed out kind of a thing because she went kind of bloodthirsty too. But in many instances, she is not considered a evil thing. So I think your idea that it might be dealing with the legitimacy that he is a full-blooded, you know, divinity of both Hera and Zeus, and, you know, that process kind of put him as the only male that had that, does, you know, come to pass as a very viable point of reference. And, you know, you're not going to always have, if you're dealing with the energies of battle and war, you know, the aspects are bloody. They're, you know, you're out there. I really kind of, at first I was very frustrated and upset about him, and now I've kind of begun to get a little bit less because the information I'm seeing, but then in having our conversation and now this, it's kind of like looking like there is, it is never one-sided. So
right.
With that,
right.
I think that we, you know, we will probably, we have a little bit more, maybe one more minute before we do our break, but I really am, you know, they didn't do a lot of temples. He didn't get a lot of places on the Acropolis, and I think you're right about Athens and the concepts that you exposed in your conversation, I think are very mm-hmm. valid. I really do. After taking some of this information and as you're talking and I'm looking at my notes and I'm going, well, you know, they're saying, well, he wasn't very, you know, in the main part of Greece and, of course, Sparta and Thrace and all these other places where he was because they didn't want him in that place. And I think we're supposed to be right now we are to do our break. So break away, Nagashiva.
Break.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned as more magic is coming your way right after these messages. LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com. The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman, Sundays, 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays, 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Miss Phoenix LeFay, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield, in syndication, Wednesdays, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voith, Thursdays, 4 to 5. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at LuckyMojo.com.
All right. We're back. We're back. I will not say the R word. If I do, it'll probably become silly. It's your turn, darling. I'm going to turn the whole process over to you and what you would like to speak on.
Oh. Okay. Well, you know what? I want to talk about working with the deity Aries, but first I want to fill in. I want to talk about just a couple of stories because they're so interesting, and it seems like I got to tell you, when I actually recently watched the movie Troy, where I think Brad Pitt plays the Achilles, And, you know, I watched it years ago, but rewatching it last week, I just thought, they didn't even, like, really feature, I mean, besides Achilles and him talking to his mother, didn't really feature any of the gods, deities in that story, which is a little bit disappointing because they were very involved in the whole story of the Trojan War. And it began with, the whole backstory of what actually started it was, you know, just like so many other problems with Greek mythology, or within Greek mythology, the chain of events that led to the Trojan War began when Zeus decided to intervene in the affair of mortals. And that, and the jealousy that rose up between three goddesses, led to a war between the mortals in the Trojan War. And so what happened is, due to a prophecy, Zeus feared that the sea goddess, this, would one day give birth to a son who would be powerful enough to threaten his dominion of gods and men. And in order to avoid the birth of such a being, Zeus arranged for Thetis to marry Peleus, a mortal man, as their offspring would thus be mortal or half mortal, and then wouldn't be a threat to Zeus. So there's also some sources that even claim that Zeus wanted to reduce the mortal population. Anyway, so Zeus wanted the wedding to proceed smoothly, and so as a result, he neglected to invite Eris, the goddess of strife and discord. So this, of course, did not sit well with Eris, who decided to seek her revenge through kind of like a practical joke. So during the wedding, Eris threw a golden apple, also known as the apple of discord, with the inscription to the fairest. And she's just like, there's so much family drama behind this stuff. It's really hilarious in a way. So she throws this apple in to the fairest, it says, and into the midst of the gods and goddesses. So there's three goddesses, Hera, Athena, and Aphrodite. And each wanted to claim the apple for themselves. So Zeus, who didn't want to get on the bad side of either of the goddesses, decided that this guy named Paris, a mortal prince from Troy, that he wanted him to make the decision because he thought that Paris was a fair judge. So anyway, I'll just say the goddesses are, all of the gods and goddesses, usually don't like to play by the rules. And so each of the three goddesses offered to shower Paris with some wonderful gift if he promised to rule in their favor. So Athena promised him wisdom and strength. Hera offered to make him a wealthy and powerful king. And Aphrodite proclaimed that she that if he declares her as the winner, she would grant him the most beautiful woman in the world for him to wed. So so naturally, the lustiness got to him and turned out to be the deciding factor. And so Paris declared that Aphrodite was the fairest of them all. So Aphrodite stayed true to her word and presented him or matched him up with Helen of Sparta. And so they didn't sail off into the sunset to live happily ever after because this Helen of Sparta was married. And so did run off with Paris. this king, Menelaus, if I'm saying his name right, he was pretty pissed off when he found out that his wife had fled to Troy with Paris, her new lover. And so he sought out the help of his brother, I don't know if I'm going to say this name right either, Agamemnon, who was a king and had a really strong army. So he asked him to come help him retrieve his wife from Paris. So they were in Troy. So anyway, so this brother, Agamemnon, he actually had been kind of searching for like a just reason to go and conquer Troy for quite a while. So he was really happy about it. He's like, yeah. So anyway, but note that behind all this, it's mostly, I would say, Zeus's fault for this whole chain of events. Anyway, so in this war, the gods took their sides. So Poseidon, Hermes, Hephaestus, Athena, Hera, and Thetis sided with the Greeks, while Apollo, Ares, Artemis, and Aphrodite sided with the Trojans. And so that, like, started the whole mess there. And then there was a couple of them that ended up switching sides in the middle. Zeus was hesitant to send any gods at all, but when he was asleep, Poseidon was the first one to go and help the Greeks. So it kind of ended up kind of going almost like a free-for-all after a while. And so that was a war that actually lasted for like 10 years. There's like so much more I could say about it, but that's one of the most, I would say, one of the bigger stories featuring Ares and a number of the other deities in that whole pantheon.
Right.
So there, yeah, that is just...
Well, I know that there was a lot of drama and a lot of, you know, all back and forth. And, you know, we've all seen the different movies that have been made and all stories. And so, you know, take one side or the other. But ultimately, it was, personally, it's one of those where you look at and you go, you guys are bored and you're just doing theatrical drama. And it's like a soap opera.
Yeah, absolutely.
When it comes to that. But so what kind of magic working can you do with using Ares to help out?
Well, with Ares, I think if you're drawn to working with him, Ares seems to be like a formidable protector. Because he does have, like, an aggressive warlike nature, and he has a love for battle. So he can be a really good deity and for help if you're trying to guard against and fight off harmful people or, you know, hexes or other kind of evil works coming your way. And some say that it can help you to channel your anger into something more physical or energizing, kind of like fitness or strength training and physical conditioning, stuff like that. But he's also notable, you know, for being a powerful guardian of family and of women, and especially like of sexual assault victims. And that's because he, his daughter. The other thing is he's also father of the Amazon, which is interesting because I never knew that.
Neither did I.
But his daughter, Alcippe. So there was this entity, the if I'm saying it right, Alaruk. Alcaeus was the son of Poseidon, and he pursued and harassed Alcippe, the daughter of Ares. And his suit turned into stalking and harassment, which ultimately turned to rape. And then Ares didn't hesitate. He went and killed Poseidon's son for doing it to his daughter. And so the other thing that comes out of that is the gods held like a court, like a trial, for him because he had murdered son of a Poseidon. Mm-hmm. And so that was supposed to be like one of the first trials for killing a fellow immortal son. And so, but he ended up being absolved of his actions in that small hill in Athens where that whole court thing took place came to be known as the Hill of Ares. And so he is supposed to be, he's noted to be good for calling upon for protection of sexual assault victims and also for court cases. Supposed to be good to call upon for any matters of courage and bravery. And I've heard, you know, it's funny because I did talk to a couple people lately that do work with Aries, which I didn't know before. But both of them told me that he feels very protective, almost kind of like a big brother energy, and he can help you overcome fears and challenges. Yeah, so I think that, oh, you know what, there's another aspect to him, which I tried digging a little more, but I couldn't find, like, the examples or the stories of it, but he also is, like, in Asia Minor, was known as an auricular deity. And so auricular is, you know, for divination and getting answers. And so he can he had a lot of people that he fought against, but he also had a lot of people that, you know, came against him. And so I think that he can be petitioned as an auricular deity to determine, like, who's working against you. If you feel that somebody is, but you're not sure who.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting because I heard somebody was saying the way that they saw Aries was that they saw him, like, as the everyday foot soldier type of deity. So he kind of aligns more with people who are drafted or forced into the front line, people who maybe aren't, that are maybe in basic conflict. And that I was told that he fights because he loves battle, but not for any other reason. He's usually not on any one side, unlike Athena, who's kind of more like representing geopolitical power in, in the forces of strategy. So he's, especially because he is, like, fully divine, he's a powerful deity to work with when it comes to protection. And when you feel you're being unfavored or that you have many working against you. And so some of the things to, you know, create some type of altar space system, you can just, if you can't get like a statue, you can just maybe print out an image of him, maybe put some of the symbolism that appeals to Aries would be to have, like, maybe a spear or sword, shield, or any kind of warlike armory. And he also likes dogs, vultures, eagles, dragons, and snakes. So any of those, any of that imagery on an altar would be really appropriate for him. Some of the best smoke offerings are frankincense is the, probably the best one. But then I've also heard that people will use myrrh, dragon's blood, and sandalwood. Are supposed to be good for him. And as far as, like, herbs, I've seen that he, ash trees are somehow related to him, and so any kind of ash tree leaves or branches or wood shavings for any oak tree leaf branches. And then I saw that some sources say that he likes nutmeg and cinnamon and bay leaves. So I would, you know, maybe burn some of those, or I'll put like a little dish of them on the altar. The best colors that for him are red and black, representing blood and death. And the best crystals I've heard are bloodstone, or a red agate, or a red ruby. So I think to work with him, I would kind of approach him the way you would any other deity that you want to get aligned with, you know, where you would kind of like study some of his story, get to know characteristics. And I know that he is a deity that does require an offering. So, you know, do like incense or herbs or candles. So I have heard that some of the best offerings for him is wine, whiskey, black coffee, or black tobacco. And also blood, but I'm going to caution people about in blood. If you're going to do something like that, I would probably just do, like if you're a gardener, if you have like a little bit of blood meal, that. Or if you're cooking some chicken or other kind of, you know, poultry or something, you have like a little couple of drops of blood from that, you could. And something else that I personally like is the thought of using a broken chain, because in ancient times Aries was often chained in different cities so that he would stay there and protect them. But the feeling that I get like is with any spirit, especially a deity, I would want to form a bond of co-creation and not try to enslave him, you know. And so I think, you know, you might appeal to him by putting like a broken chain on your altar.
That means you're not going to chain him. Yeah, that you would stay away from that. So,
yeah,
well,
absolutely.
These are good things. These are good things. I know that we've got a little bit of time left before, but not a lot. And one of the things I wanted to kind of bring out, which when I was doing this work, I thought, you know, they talk about this God, he presides over the emotions that lead to violence, which is hatred and rage. We're talking about, you know, in the way we're doing this month is mastering our inner warriors. So you look at that emotion, which comes out, which is hatred and rage, and trying to work with working on letting it find, like you, I thought that your idea of doing, you know, athletics and, you know, exercise is really good, because you're channeling that aggressive energy into something that has a productive way of going about that, you know, moving that that emotion. And I know that with the way we have been seeing out in, you know, out in the world, a lot of the stuff that's going on, that it, you know, it is a way to take it, because, you know, this is physical, violent, untamed energy that he represents. And as you said, he is a full deity, so it's a full force energy that works with that. So I can say that, you know, he, you know, literally taking and moving with it in a way that masters your own inner warrior, as opposed to constantly erupting and, you know, spewing stuff. Now, you know, over the years, I have experienced my own rage and my own, you know, aspects. And I think you and I have talked about it a lot. The idea is rather than literally just throwing it all out there and, you know, like then all of a sudden the entire place is burned and decimated, is finding a creative way in physical form, meaning being able to physically do something with it. And I think that's a lot of reasons why people, you know, martial arts or what is it, boxing and kickboxing. And, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, it's anyone can do it at any age, but it's the idea that you take versions of this and find ways to channel that aspect of working with that in anger. And,
that's
of course, the same thing is doing the ritual and working with the magic. It needs to be, if you go from a lesser emotional state and work with it from finding a way to have this taken care of in a more holistic way, rather than, you know, I'm just going to go and punch you into the ground till you're dead or whatever. I think it works better, and I know that all of us get to that point somewhere in our lives, sometimes, you know, over things that are very bad. And I just keep seeing there is a point where we need to learn that control and movement in a way. So
absolutely.
I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. I love the idea of channeling it into something physical, channeling it into charging yourself up, you know, motivating yourself, challenging your own strengths, standing your ground, but doing it in a way where you're not going on pure, you know, raw emotion, you know, where you have to you have to balance that out. And so Aries is this deity, and I think that, you know, caution is that if you're utilizing this deity for positive outcomes, you'll find that you can become very filled with a real high intensity energy. But if don't call upon him for vengeance and war, because he does love battle and won't be able to rein him in if you change your mind later on. And so that, you know, impulsiveness is, he's not a deity that should be appealed to in an impulsive manner. Definitely not going to be in anybody's best interest.
Well, and I think that, you know, I think bloodlust in its truest sense of, you know, all of the potentiality of all of the different belief systems that come up about, you know, going after the situation in a such a energized way,
like,
that you have no reason behind what you're doing. It's just you do it.
Right.
It, you know, is going to create, is reactive. Yeah. And that's the dark side. Okay. That is the dark side of this deity. And there is that, just like there's dark sides to every one of the deities that are out there, even our most beloved Hecate, that you realize that this is, you know, just because he's the god of war, and we go with righteous war, and ours is the righteous, you know, you got to back off. You really do. And stop that rhetoric, that because that's stirring everything up. And I know that's what a lot of people do, and I know that's a lot of what, you know, getting that rage to go out and, you know, do what we, you know, do the war. It's funny that you said that. Well, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. No, I was just going to say, and the thing is that when you are being so reactionary like that. What that is really based in is usually fear, you know, and that's, can't let that, you know, can't let that control your life or your day or your decisions. Because it becomes like a cancer within yourself, and it'll just eat away at your own soul. So, yeah, don't do it.
No, not it. So basically, and, you know, you can, as I say, reactiveness on any side, you know, if, with any deity of any version, which, you know, you go with, is the part that I think is our, the side that we need to rein in. And I know that, you know, we are getting close to our timing close down, but I felt that was really important because we all you know, there's a part of us that, you know, whatever's going on, it's wrong and our side is right and all of that. So that's a big thing. Now, obviously, with in keeping with mastering our inner warrior, we have next week balancing and reclaiming our inner sovereignty, which I think is really a good partnership to what we've been discussing here. So, So I think before we have like a before our 1 minute warning, is there any little bit that you want to throw out there at the very end? Otherwise, I will call us out.
You know, if I would just approach them in a respectful way with an offering and you know, to use your discernment and you find a strong ally.
Definitely. Well, I know that, as you have said, there's so much more, and it's interesting, the things you brought out really give me a lot of food for thought. So I'm excited about it. And I think at this point we will talk to our set person to send us away. Nagashiva, you can start us on our out.
We'll float away.
We'll fly. Yes. So you can shout us out, darling.
With John as well.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio broadcast on the LMC radio network. Our podcast airs live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Central, and is available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website at witchpriestessandcauldron.com. That's witchpriestessandcauldron.com. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. Blessed be.